Blog Talk Radio.
So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview, brought to you today by Audible.com. Get a free audiobook at www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia. That's where you'll find more than 75,000 titles to choose from for your iPod or MP3 player. Soon, maybe even one for my guest today. Again, that's audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia. So where was I before the commercial? Oh, yeah. Mr. Media is recorded live from the former retirement capital of the New World and now known as the new media center of the known universe, St. Petersburg, Florida. I'm going to turn 50 later this year. I know, woe is to me. It's a weird sensation, you know, knowing that AARP is prepared to invite me into its ranks, that I probably have fewer years ahead paying into Social Security and Medicare than getting money from Social Security and Medicare, that middle age is finally, officially about to catch up with my more salt than pepper thin hair and beard, and that all the talk about preparing for retirement is, sadly, no longer just talk. I know. Whoa, slow down, Bob. You're depressing everybody, yourself included. Next week, on April 15th, 2010, in case you're listening to this far in the future, I'll even be attending the Florida Boomer Lifestyle Conference, which will be held in Clearwater, Florida, at Ruth Eckerd Hall. It is designed to help us understand how the recession has impacted boomers. I expect to learn what they're spending money on right now. They, did I say we? What we're spending, I meant to say we. Which messages resonate most with us, and what boomers want from businesses today. And apparently, more early bird dinner specials is not the correct answer. Joining me today, in advance of his appearance as a guest speaker at the Florida Boomer Lifestyle Conference, that's a mouthful, isn't it, is Mark Miller, author of the upcoming book, The Hard Times Guide to Retirement Security, which will be in great bookstores everywhere this June, maybe even late May if you're lucky, and you can also pre-order it on MrMedia.com. By the way, the Florida Boomer Lifestyle Conference is open to the public. You can register online to attend it at www.floridaboomerlifestyle.com. That's all solid. Mark Miller, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
My pleasure. I'm delighted to have you here to further depress me. Thank you, sir.
I'll try not to do that.
Well, the book obviously isn't out yet, but I think the major takeaway is right there in the title. It's the Hard Times Guide to Retirement.
That's absolutely right. I come at this from having reported in this area of retirement and aging and with a particular focus on the boomer generation for about the last 5 years. And before the recession, the thing that struck me so much was just how little our generation, and I'm a boomer myself, I'm 55, how little thinking and planning we've really done for either retirement or, as many of us have sort of thought about, as a next phase of life that's not really a traditional retirement. And we can talk about that if you like. But nonetheless, not a lot of planning. You know, I think planning sort of before the crash could be summed up for many boomers as something is going to work out. You know, that was sort of our plan. Not a lot of planning for what's a very big transition point in life. A lot of data to support that. Only about half of Americans overall are participating in workplace retirement plans. The average amount that we've saved for retirement is about $60,000. That's not nearly enough. And just the litany goes on. So when the economy crashed, I just said, this is, you know, the economic crash just doubled down that situation, and the urgency of doing the book was clear to me.
Now, I'm sorry, you said you were 55,
yeah.
I think you said. How much planning had you done?
Some, but not enough. And actually, I got some great takeaways from my own book that I'm implementing.
Is the book itself part of your retirement plan?
I certainly hope so. But you've been published enough books to know that that's something fervently to be wished for.
Yeah, sad but true.
I do a variety of writing in this space. I do a weekly syndicated newspaper column called Retire Smart that runs in about 25, 30 newspapers around the country, and I publish a website called Retirement Revised and do a lot of writing in a variety of spaces about this. So this is my special focus. And I come out of a long background in business and financial news, so that's kind of the perspective I bring to it is personal finance and career-oriented stuff.
You know, as we talk about this, I'm thinking, I had a great aunt many years ago who had saved her whole life for retirement. She had worked, I love this story, she had worked at Macy's, Herald Square, the main Macy's in New York, in the complaint department for 49 and a half years. And she, her dream was just to retire to Florida and have a great time and travel with her husband. And she couldn't wait to that last 6 months to retire, have her 50 years in, everything that came with. And she had, she had saved money. She had put it all aside. She never spent anything on herself. 6 months before she retired, she would have been, late 60s, I guess. She started working, I think, when she was 17. Her husband had a stroke. They never got to live out their dreams. They wound up in a tiny little hovel in South Florida, and that scared the crap out of me, that story. And I decided very early that I was going to try to look out for retirement, but at the same time, I wasn't going to wait that long. And the reason I even tell this story is I think that boomers have always been that generation who want it now. They don't want to wait. They want what they want when they want it, and they deal with the consequences later. Is that wrong?
No, I think there's some truth to that. But I think the other factor at work with the boomer generation is that, we've been a pretty busy crowd these last 20, 30 years. You're looking at households that are, in many cases, dual income, both parents working, raising kids, paying, monstrously high college tuition. So it hasn't always been all that easy to put money away, but, it's also getting caught up in some of the consumerism and, debt-fueled economic stuff that we saw that led up to the bubble and the crash. So I think it's a confluence of some complex factors. I don't particularly buy into that line of thinking that boomers are just, self-absorbed and selfish and, don't have any ability to look out for the long term.
Mark, have you met any boomers? Sorry, couldn't resist. tell folks about some of the key points that they'll find in your book in about 6 weeks.
Sure. One of the main points I'm trying to bring home here is that the economy we're looking at is pretty much the economy we're going to be retiring into. I think we're all trained to think about economic cycles as, you have a recession and then you have a big rebound and everything goes back to the way it was. And we're going to have a recovery, no doubt. It appears to be getting underway, mild as it might be. But there are some things that are a little different this time around. You've got the bursting of the housing bubble. It's going to take a long time for us to work through that from the standpoint of the decline in housing and the debt that people are carrying. Stock market's coming back a little better. But we're looking up from the bottom of a pretty deep pit, in terms of job security. AARP came out with a study recently showing that joblessness among people 55 and up has risen more than 300% since 2000. So people who are thinking ahead to retirement need to think about it as this is more or less the economy we're going to be dealing with. So that's a big wake-up call. So the book is really saying, what do we do about that now? And this is not a magic bullet solution kind of book, take one of these and everything will be fine in the morning. I'm really trying to cull through some of the most solid thinking I've been able to find out there, cut through the noise, and get people focused on kind of a back-to-basics approach. And another fundamental idea in the book is that we're going to really have to retire the old notion of what retirement was. And even before the economy changed, that was the case for many boomers. Survey after survey showed that 3/4 of boomers didn't have any interest in really doing a traditional retirement. They saw maybe leaving or retiring from what they had been doing, but perhaps moving into an exciting second career. It wasn't just going to be the retirement to Florida notion. The old idea of retirement really stems from ideas linked to the Social Security program, and that idea that you kind of hang it up when you're 65. And that's an outmoded notion because people are living much longer, and we can't, number one, we can't fund all those years of retirement. We can't afford to. And people don't want to, nor should they want to. I mean, there's plenty of evidence to suggest that people are happier and healthier when they're engaged in something. So there's this whole question of kind of reinvention of retirement that rides right alongside in my book with just the more the numbers side of things and what's going on with the economy.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm glad you mentioned about kind of the reinvention of it because, I don't know, anyone I've known, it seems like there's two groups of people when they retire. There's the people who retire and have really know the things that they want to do, and they'll succeed because, you know, maybe it's a little bit work, but, you know, they know that, you know, they've been working all their lives. They're not the kind of person to sit still. And then there's those people who keep looking to that number, whether it's 62, 65, or 70, and that number is going to solve all their problems. And they're going to be failures in retirement because they haven't really thought about what is it that I want to do with all that time I'm going to have. And,
right. That's what makes it such a profound change. You know, the loss of the social structure of work and just an unstructured time period of time in front of you. And as I say, there's lots and lots of evidence that people are more successful in this last third of life. They live longer, they're happier and healthier when they are engaged. And, you know, your question a few minutes ago about sort of self-involvement, one of the big trends we're seeing among boomers is people asking themselves the question of, you know, how can they make a contribution to help right what's wrong in society? And so, you know, one concept that's emerged is that of the so-called encore career, people moving into second careers that have sort of social meaning, whether that's, you know, people transitioning into careers in teaching or healthcare or the nonprofit arena. You know, people are asking themselves, you know, looking around at the world and saying, what can I do with my time and skills and resources to help make things better? So that's a real encouraging trend for all kinds of reasons. You're looking at such a huge number of people. You know, the boomer, one of the things interesting about the boomer generation, it's the largest we've ever had. So 75 million people. Now, not every one of them is going to go into these kinds of encore careers, obviously, but whatever trends and directions this group moves in, you know, does have impact.
Well, let's talk some more hard times. Sure. Is the advice in the book – now, it's interesting. People don't get this. You know, a book comes out, and yours is about 6 weeks off. A book comes out, and it's like instant in people's hands, but a lot of people don't necessarily understand or appreciate that there's a big lag time, maybe a year, maybe 6 months from the time that you actually finish the book to the time they have it in hand. And the reason I'm mentioning this is, would the advice that you would have given – when you started on this book, which I'm going to guess was probably a year and a half to 2 years ago, have been the same 2 years later? And have you been able to adjust in the book for the dramatic changes that we've seen?
Yeah. Well, great question. First of all, I should say I wrote this on a fairly fast timetable. I started the book last March, and I turned in the first manuscript in September. So, you know, that's a little shorter timeline than perhaps is typical. And I actually went in and made some changes to one chapter in particular last month after the passage of the new healthcare reform law, because I have an entire chapter on healthcare as it affects older Americans. And my publisher was kind enough to let me go in and make an update there, because that chapter dealt with sort of two audiences. One is people on Medicare, and the other is people sort of in their 50s and early 60s who are too young for Medicare. And the healthcare reform law has some pretty important changes in it that affect that second audience, and there are some that affect people on Medicare, but less so. So, you know, I think it's most of what I have in here is still pretty current, I would say.
Okay. All right.
And the book is really divided up into – go ahead.
No, you please.
I was just going to say the book is kind of divided up into thirds. One third deals with money-related matters. Another third deals with career issues. And then another third deals with more sort of living and lifestyle questions. So it's not a, you know, this is not a book just focused on what to do with your stock portfolio.
Okay.
Although I address that. But that's one of the issues to me is I think we've had way too much equating of retirement security with investing. I think over the last 20, 30 years, the marketing machines on Wall Street have pretty much managed to get people to equate those two things in their mind, when in fact, you know, 401ks are far from the most important financial asset most people bring into retirement, and there's a lot of thinking that the whole system of voluntary workplace investing is just not getting us where it needs to be. So I take a much broader look at the financial equations.
I'm going to guess, though, that you deal with money first.
I do deal with money first.
That, I mean, because, you know, it would just seem obvious that that's the thing that people are most concerned about when they're thinking about retirement.
Certainly. Certainly. So the first 10 chapters of the book deal with various aspects of financing retirement.
Should people be panicked? I mean, you know, can they straighten themselves out? Let's say, I feel, you know, barring some disaster, which always seems to be lurking around the bend, that, you know, my wife and I have done a pretty good job of thinking ahead and preparing. I don't know that we're perfect, but from what I read, I think we're ahead of a few people because we haven't done anything crazy and we haven't gotten bogged down in debt and we have put something aside. But, you know, somebody who's turning 50, as I am this year, looking at themselves saying, you know, I haven't really planned this out. Is it too late to get, you know, to get their act together?
Absolutely not. Emphatically not. 10 to 15 years, you know, is plenty of time to make whatever adjustments and to get a plan together. I think one of the most important things people need to do is really have a plan. There's a difference between socking away as much money as you can, which of course is a great thing to do. There's a difference between that and having a real plan that says, you know, at least try to take some guesstimate as to what you're going to need in retirement to spend. You know, there's another one of the falsehoods out there is there's a rule of thumb that is often applied that people say, well, you're going to need to have 80% of your pre-retirement income in retirement as a rule of thumb. And an economist I know refers to that as the rule of dumb. And it really is dumb. I mean, you know, all kinds of things change in retirement. You may need to spend more. You may need to spend less. There's many variables. So it's important to really sit down and try to pencil out a plan. And the best way to do that is to start with a good, solid look at your current budget, and then you do some adding and subtracting of what you think you're going to need. You know, some things go away in retirement, for example, the cost of commuting, or you don't need to buy as many work clothes, just for example. But other things may increase. Your spending on health care probably will increase. You may want to travel more. So it's important to sit down and do a specific plan. And I'm an advocate of getting some financial advice, because I think for most people, it's pretty clear from our experiences of the last few decades that most of us aren't terribly good at this stuff. And I think it's penny wise, pound foolish to say, well, I don't want to spend money on a financial planner. You know, I think you can, if you find the right person, that person can more than pay for themselves over the long haul with some good assistance in putting together a plan. So, but 10 to 15 years is a lot of time to put things right. You know, it's a matter of looking at what you're saving and projecting on that. Another real important component is looking at debt. And people tend to not think about this, but one of the best ways to improve your overall financial security in retirement is to enter into retirement with as little debt as possible, because that's the best way to improve your cash flow in retirement, one of the best ways. And with investments returning so little right now, if you look at somebody who's close to retirement, they really shouldn't have all that much money in the stock market, so they're probably in CDs or bonds, which means they're, you know, getting maybe 1% return on their money right now, 2% if they're lucky. Now, if you're carrying, a 5% mortgage, if you have an available dollar, where should you put that dollar? And should you put it into something that's going to return 1%, or should you put it into something that returns 5% effectively? Or you can maybe argue a little less after tax if it's a mortgage. But if you take my point, you know, investing in debt reduction is a very solid way to go. So people ought to be looking at and projecting their debt loads towards retirement. The real obvious things to try to get rid of are credit card debt, since it's, the rates are so onerous. But even mortgage debt is a great thing to reduce, and try to think ahead towards having a small mortgage or no mortgage in retirement. So there's a lot of things. If you have 10 or 15 years, that's plenty of time to work on these things.
Good, good. All right, everybody, take a deep breath. you can pull yourself out of this. Now, I got to add a cautionary note, though. You know, my mom is 72, and everybody's got their own stories, but my mom is 72, and the aunt I mentioned earlier wound up leaving a chunk of money to my mom, and my mom, who I didn't know at the time, I mean, I knew my mom, but I didn't know that she had this issue at the time, was just lives in fear of money and managing money. And at the time, we, you know, I said, well, because she's not local, I said, why don't you find a credible financial advisor, someone who can help you with the money? So she did that, and I won't name the company, but and I didn't keep on top of it at the time. This was, you know, more than 15 years ago. And the guy just led her down the wrong path. And when she was worried about it, she would call him. Rarely when she would look into it and see what was going on with the accounts, she'd call him and say, you know, I'm not really comfortable with this. I'd like to get out. No, 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 you should just sit tight. This is all going to work out. She lost over 100 grand because she was cowed by this guy. And the end of the story is this. She told me a week ago that she got a letter about a class action suit against the brokerage firm. And it's a national, well-known, very well-known company that she was going to get a settlement from the class action. I said, oh, well, good, because I didn't even know this was going on. And it was because they had misled so many people. Do you know how much money she got from that?
Not much, I'm sure.
$20.42.
Okay, that's not much.
No, well, it's not much at all.
You're asking a critical question, and I'm glad we're going to go down this path. It's really important. I have a whole chapter in the book devoted to how to hire a financial advisor. It's that important. And this also is related to the whole debate going on in Washington right now about financial services reform. There are many different types of financial planners and financial advisors. There's a real alphabet soup of designations that they can earn. And more importantly, there are lots of different ways that they are compensated. So the key things to look for when you're hiring an advisor, the real critical question is what's called fiduciary duty. And that's the legal phrase that means who does this person have legal responsibility to uphold the best interests of? Is it to you, the client, or to the firm they work for? So people who work for stock brokerage companies and are advisors do not have fiduciary duty to the client. They have fiduciary duty to themselves and to their companies, and what they are compensated on commission primarily. So they're compensated by selling product to you. I'm not saying you cannot get good advice from those folks, but there's an obvious built-in bias. So they're selling product that, you know, is tied to their income. The other kind of advisor you can hire, and these are typically people who are either independents or work for small firms, are called registered investment advisors, and they have a legal fiduciary duty to you. And what you want to look for is somebody who works on a fee-only basis, not fee-based, because fee-based means it's a combination of fees you pay plus commissions they earn on products, but fee-only. That means you're going to pay a fee for their services on an hourly basis, or maybe on some other basis, on an annual basis. But you're getting the most unbiased advice, and those folks also are going to look across the whole range of your financial needs, not just stock brokerage, but they'll look at your debt situation, they'll look at your insurance and so forth. And the last point I want to make about this, and this is critical, you never want to hire an advisor where you're handing that money over straight to that person's company. It should always be held in a custodial account at a third party, like a Charles Schwab or a TD Ameritrade. All the big companies like that offer these custodial services. So you're not writing a check to Joe Smith, financial advisor. The check gets written to the custodial firm. And that puts an important, extra margin of safety in there. That was one of the problems in the Madoff scandal. Madoff was acting as his own custodial. There was no check and balance in that situation. So I don't want to say that, you know, any old financial planner is the right one. You have to be very careful. And as I say, I devote a whole chapter to this in the book.
Well, and I would add to that, too. I mean, one of the other things that I learned from my mother's experience is it's your darn money. You have to be on top of it. You can't just hand it over and expect in 25 years without you keeping track of it that it's that what you want is what's going to happen.
So to that point, you want somebody who's not going to recommend investment solutions or financial solutions that you can't understand. You know, myself, when I was going through the process of interviewing for a financial advisor myself, one of the people we interviewed, terrific guy, but he was recommending all kinds of complex bell and whistle sorts of financial products that, and I've been a business journalist for 25 years, that I was having trouble following. But that's not the guy I want. I want to be in things that I can understand. So I actually wound up hiring somebody whose main focus isn't really on investing. In fact, what she's done is taken our money and put it into, you know, low-fee index funds and exchange-traded funds, period. It was just a question of how much, what's the allocation? Is it 40%, 50% to stocks? They're going to go into these funds, period, we're done with it. And that's great because I can sleep at night because I understand what those products are.
Got it. Well, we're gonna run out of time soon. I wanted to ask you, are these the things that we're talking about? Is this what people going to the Florida Boomers Lifestyle Conference next week? Is this the kind of thing you'll be talking about? Is this been a good preview?
Yeah, the first day of the conference. The first day of the conference on the 14th is really more driven around issues of interest to the general public or consumers, if you put it that way. The second day, I would say, is a little bit more of a business-to-business conference, primarily being attended by people who are involved in marketing and advertising product stuff in this marketplace to boomers, if you will. I'm going to be presenting both days. And the first day, I'll be talking about a lot of the issues you and I are chatting about. And the second day, I plan to sort of frame this a little bit more as, you know, insights for people who are trying to understand the marketplace. But my main focus is on the, you know, what we're talking about right here.
Okay, and you also have you mentioned before your website, which is retirementrevised.com.
Right.
What kind of things can people find there? What kind of resources?
You can find I write there about money. I write about career. I write about health, things like Medicare, Social Security. It's very much about this notion of reinvention of retirement. Hence the name of the site, Retirement Revised. And also, if you're interested in checking out the book, there's a small website for that, too, called hardtimesretirement.com.
Very good. And I want to point out that, folks, if you have a Twitter account, if you're into Twitter, you can follow Mark there. It's twitter.com, and he is Retire Revised. It's one word, R-E-T-I-R-E-R-E-V-I-S-E-D. Or you
right.
can probably search Mark Miller, but
there's also a little link at the upper right side of my homepage to my Twitter, Facebook, and LinkedIn and everything else. So you can find them right there as well.
Very good. Well, folks, listen, you can find Mark Miller's book, The Hard Times Guide to Retirement Security, in great bookstores everywhere, late May, early June, as I understand it, or you can order it online at MrMedia.com or at his site, RetirementRevised.com. And don't forget about the Florida Boomer Lifestyle Conference, April 14th and 15th. I'll be there on the 15th. You can learn more about it, and you can sign up online at FloridaBoomerLifestyle.com. Mark, thanks so much for joining us today. It was very interesting. And
thank you, Bob. I really enjoyed talking with you. Thank you very much.
My pleasure. You take care, and we'll see you next week.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And for more original interviews on business topics, you can surf over to our main website, www.mrmedia.com. That's where you can listen to my earlier conversations with the founder of Four Seasons Hotels and Resorts, Isidore Sharp, as well as Guy Kawasaki from alltop.com, and Rick Aquila from Roto-Rooter, of all things. He was recently on Undercover Boss, by the way. And please take advantage of this great offer for Mr. Media Radio listeners. Go to www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia to get a free audiobook download of your choice when you sign up today. Again, that's www.audiblepodcast.com/mrmedia for your free audiobook. And subscribe to Mr. Media on iTunes, and you'll never miss a show. Just search Mr. Media Interviews from within iTunes and subscribe for free. You can also listen with a piece of string and a tin can in many locations. If you've got an idea for a guest, email me directly at bob@andelman.com. You can also follow me on Facebook or on Twitter, www.twitter.com/andelman or facebook.com/andelman. Thanks so much for joining us today. Always appreciate when you give up a little piece of your day and come spend it with us. Thanks for listening, everybody.